Hello, and welcome to this morning's edition of 5 at 8. Today is Tuesday, March 12th, 2024, and I'm Mark Overman, joined by my co-host Linda Carlisle. In this episode, we'll talk about an alleged bribery scheme in the Philippines providing right-wing media outlets like Fox News with potential defense and defamation lawsuits from Smartmatic over 2020 election lies. EU countries agreeing on regulations for determining gig economy worker status. Former senior advisors to Donald Trump revealing his admiration for authoritarian leaders. The United States planning to reopen an embassy in Libya. And the U.S. providing additional aid for a UN-backed security mission in Haiti to combat gang violence. Story number one. Alleged bribery scheme in the Philippines provides right-wing media outlets like Fox News with potential defense in defamation lawsuits from Smartmatic over 2020 election lies. Fox, OAN, and Newsmax are seeking documents related to the scandal to bolster their cases. Smartmatic denies wrongdoing and is appealing disqualification from future elections in the Philippines. Fox argues Smartmatic's reputation was already damaged by foreign scandals, not their false claims. OAN and Newsmax are also pursuing foreign documents to support their defenses. The lawsuits could pose a significant threat to the outlet's businesses. According to CNN, this situation is unfolding as the media outlets navigate legal challenges. Why, this is quite a scandal, isn't it, Linda? Fox News, OAN, and Newsmax using this bribery case in the Philippines as a potential defense against the defamation lawsuits they're facing from Smartmatic. It's a clever move, I have to admit, trying to prove that Smartmatic's reputation was already damaged due to these foreign scandals.
Yes, it is, Mark. But what we have to remember is that it's not just about the cleverness of the legal strategy. It's about the potential damage that misinformation can do. These media outlets gave airtime to unverified claims that Smartmatic rigged the 2020 election against Donald Trump, claims which have been proven false.
And, that's the thing, isn't it? We're living in a world where misinformation can spread like wildfire. In the, case of the 2020 election, these claims had serious implications, including fueling distrust in our democratic process.
That's a crucial point, Mark. And this isn't just about our own backyard. We see similar scenarios playing out globally. Media outlets disseminating unverified or false information, and then, when facing legal consequences, they bring in ongoing scandals or foreign controversies as a defense. It's a concerning pattern.
True. And it brings up this tension, right? Between media freedom, the right to information, and the spread of misinformation. And it's not just about the legal consequences, it's also about the erosion of public trust.
At the end of the day, journalism is about the pursuit of truth. When media outlets prioritize sensationalism over truth, they're not just breaking ethical codes, they're damaging the very fabric of public trust.
Story number two. In a report from Al Jazeera, EU countries have agreed on regulations for determining when gig economy workers at online platforms are considered employees, with a revised text scrapping proposed criteria by the European Commission. The new rules would rely on national law, collective agreements, and case law to determine employment status, placing the burden of proof on companies. The Platform Work Directive aims to improve the rights of workers on gig economy apps and ban certain types of automated monitoring. The European Parliament will vote on the agreement next month. Uber stated that the approval will maintain the status quo for platform workers. Will you look at that, Linda? A major shift in the way gig economy workers are being viewed in the European Union? It's fascinating to see how they're grappling with the status of these workers. What's your take on this?
Well, Mark, it's indeed a significant development. It's clear that the EU is trying to find a balance between protecting workers' rights and maintaining the flexibility that is inherent in the gig economy. The decision to classify these workers as employees, if the platform controls their pay, working hours, or supervises their performance, could be a game changer.
Absolutely, but they're also shifting the burden of proof onto the companies, right? They're the ones who have to prove these workers are not their employees. That's got to be a big deal.
It certainly is, Mark. That's a big departure from the previous draft agreement. It essentially puts the onus on the companies to justify their practices. And while this may lead to greater scrutiny, it also maintains a certain level of flexibility for the gig economy. It's a delicate balance.
Delicate indeed. And what about this bit about banning the use of automated monitoring systems to process personal data, like biometric data or emotional state? That's a new one for me.
Yes, it's an interesting inclusion. It's clearly a response to growing concerns about privacy and the increasing use of technology to monitor workers. It's yet another way the EU is trying to protect the rights of these workers.
So, overall, sounds like the EU is moving towards more protections for gig workers. But I wonder, Linda, how does this compare to what's happening in other parts of the world?
Well, Mark, that's a good question. There's been a global shift towards recognizing the unique challenges faced by gig economy workers. Different countries are at different stages of this process. But it's clear that the EU's decision will have a significant impact on the global conversation.
Story number 3. Former senior advisors to Donald Trump revealed that he praised authoritarian leaders like Viktor Orban, Xi Jinping, and Kim Jong-un, and allegedly said Adolf Hitler did some good things. They believe Trump envies their power and lacks understanding of U.S. foreign policy. Trump's admiration for dictators could lead to a shift in U.S. foreign policy if he wins a second term, potentially jeopardizing alliances like NATO and U.S. support for Ukraine. According to CNN, this information was disclosed by former senior advisors to Donald Trump. What baffles me, Linda, is how an elected leader in a democratic nation like ours can openly admire the leadership style of autocrats. I mean, don't get me wrong, every leader has their own style, but this is a bit hard to swallow.
I hear you, Mark. It's indeed a perplexing situation. To me, it reflects a fundamental misunderstanding about the role of a democratic leader. In a democracy, the leader is there to serve the people, not the other way around.
And it's not just about the leader, right? It's about the system. Authoritarian regimes might seem efficient because they have a single decision-making center, but they lack the checks and balances that protect our freedoms.
Yes, Mark. And another aspect is the admiration for the strongman image that these authoritarian leaders project. This is a clear departure from democratic leadership, which values collaboration and consensus building over individual might.
Couldn't agree more, Linda. It's crucial to remember that strength in leadership doesn't come from suppressing dissent or ruling with an iron fist. It comes from the ability to listen, to compromise, and to unite people towards a common goal.
If these tendencies continue, they could potentially reshape our alliances and impact our global standing. A shift towards authoritarianism could undermine the democratic principles that our nation and many others hold dear.
And this is not just an internal matter, right? It has far-reaching implications for our foreign policy, our relationships with our allies, and our role on the global stage.
It's essential to remember that as global citizens, we are interconnected. Actions and attitudes that promote authoritarianism could potentially destabilize the democratic order and create uncertainty.
Story number 4. In a report from CNN, the United States plans to reopen an embassy in Libya after a decade, as Russia's influence in the country grows. The State Department's budget request includes funds for embassy operations in Tripoli. The move is seen as crucial for maintaining U.S. security interests in the region. The embassy closed in 2014 due to civil unrest following the attack on U.S. facilities in Benghazi. Tell you what, Linda, this move to reopen the U.S. embassy in Libya is definitely worth discussing. It's a clear signal that the U.S. is willing to get back in the game in regions where it's been somewhat dormant. And let's be honest, with Russia maintaining its foothold in Libya, the stakes are high.
It's not just about reestablishing diplomatic presence, but about understanding the changing global dynamics. There's a clear power struggle unfolding, echoing shades of the Cold War era, where every conflict or instability becomes an opportunity for global powers like the U.S. and Russia to extend their influence.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, Linda. It's like we're seeing an updated version of the great game playout. And with this $12.7 million budget request for resuming embassy operations, the U.S. is showing that it's ready to make a significant investment. It's not just about countering Russia's influence, but also preserving its own long-term security interests.
And while we're on the subject of investment, it's crucial to look at the potential fallout on the ground. Libya has been in a state of flux for years, and this renewed engagement could have implications on the internal security dynamics and the local population. It's a delicate situation, and it's important for the U.S. to tread carefully.
Yes, Linda. And let's not forget the Benghazi incident. It's a stark reminder of the risks involved. The U.S. continues to advise its citizens not to travel to Libya due to crime, terrorism, and civil unrest. So while getting back in the game is important, ensuring the safety of diplomatic personnel must be paramount.
And this isn't just about Libya. This re-engagement reflects a broader shift in U.S. foreign policy, one that's willing to confront power struggles head-on. We've seen similar dynamics play out in the China-Taiwan-U.S. relations and the ongoing Ukraine-Russia conflict. It's a trend we'll likely continue to see in the foreseeable future.
Story number 5. The United States will provide an additional $100 million in aid for a UN-backed security mission in Haiti to combat gang violence. Secretary of State Blinken also pledged $33 million in humanitarian aid, bringing total U.S. commitments to $333 million. Despite little progress in reaching a political resolution, the U.S. aims to help restore security in Haiti while emphasizing that the Haitian people should determine their own future. Prime Minister Henry has been stranded outside Haiti as gang violence escalates and demands for his resignation increase, as reported by the New York Times. Could be a game changer, this additional $100 million in aid that the U.S. is pledging towards the UN-backed security mission in Haiti. It's a clear sign of our commitment to help restore stability in a region that's in dire need of assistance. You know, it's like they say, sometimes you gotta step up and lend a hand.
Yes, but in stepping up, are we not overshadowing the capacity of Haiti to manage its own affairs? I mean, it's a fine line between assistance and imposition, Mark. While the aid is undoubtedly beneficial in the short term, we also have to consider the long-term implications of such intervention.
I hear you, Linda, but wouldn't you agree that the current state of affairs in Haiti calls for immediate action? Gang violence is rampant. The prime minister is stuck outside his own country. It's a total mess.
I don't disagree, Mark. But the essence of sovereignty is the ability of a nation to govern itself. The U.S. stepping in with financial aid might set a precedent that challenges this principle. Remember Iraq and Afghanistan? We've seen how complicated these situations can get.
Fair point, Linda, but what's the alternative? Let's not forget the responsibility to protect principle. The international community has a role to play, particularly in preventing mass atrocities.
But the responsibility to protect should not be a blanket justification for intervention. The challenge here is striking a balance between international aid and respect for national sovereignty. We don't want to inadvertently create a situation of dependency, do we?
Well, Linda, that's a tough question. But I gotta say, in such a crisis, the focus should be on immediate relief and security. We can't just stand by while people are suffering, can we?
No, we can't, Mark. But we must also be mindful of the potential long-term effects of our actions. It's a delicate balance, and we must tread carefully.
That's it for this morning. Have a great day and see you all tomorrow.
5 at 8 is researched, written, and performed by artificial intelligence. For more information, visit botcaster.ai.